Next Outdoor Radio, a monthly feature that takes us outside to explore the natural world. Today, biologists Kent McFarlane and Sarah Zahendra are tracking the elusive Fisher cat, which really isn't a cat at all.
We are here today in Norwich, Vermont, and it is another beautiful winter day. We're walking on some nice powdery snow.
And that's the best part about it. We got snow two nights ago, and it's going to make this outdoor radio possible.
Because we are looking for a fascinating animal today. It's called a fisher.
Some of you might know it as fisher cat, but technically, and we'll learn about this later, it's really called a fisher.
And we're going to be hanging out with Steve Fascio from the Vermont Center for Eco Studies. He is an expert in fishers.
Yeah, in fact, he's done a lot of tracking of fishers, handling fishers. He's Mr. Fisher. Let's go over and talk with Steve, who's waiting for us at the edge of the woods.
And let's see if we can track us some fishers.
I'm Kent McFarlane.
And I'm Sarah Zahendra.
We're biologists with the Vermont Center for Eco Studies.
Welcome to Outdoor Radio. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Sarah.
So one thing that came up real quick before we take off is, you keep saying fisher, but a lot of people call him fisher cat. So what's the correct name for him?
Well, it's Fisher. Fisher is the official name, you know, and it's Martes Penanti is the Latin name. And fisher cat is a sort of a colloquial name that's kind of misleading because they're not cats. They're members of the weasel family.
So this is the first myth that a lot of people think about fishers, is that they're cats, but you're saying they're not at all.
They're not cats. They're good at climbing trees. They have semi-retractable claws, not fully retractable like cats.
So I know I'm looking for these tracks going out into the snow. I'm looking for not a cat. It's going to be weasel-like.
Weasel-like shape, fairly long, thin body, but roughly cat size. So, you know, bigger than a mink, but smaller than an otter.
But the same kind of color, though, a dark brown color, right?
Dark brown.
And they're called fishers, but they don't eat fish, do they?
They don't eat fish. I mean, they might occasionally, but mostly, you know, they're predators. This time of year, they're mostly looking for rodents, snowshoe hare, squirrels is a big part of their diet when they're around, and porcupines. In the summer, they'll often switch their diet and eat berries and fruits, apples.
There's not a whole lot of animals that are going to prey on porcupines because of all those quills. And one of the things in the myth of the fisher is that they flip porcupines over and scoop out their belly like a ripe melon. Is that true? Is that how they attack porcupines?
Everything I've read and from people who have actually witnessed it, fishers prey on porcupines by circling them, lashing out at their face until they inflict a mortal wound. They're fast and they're willing to expend a lot of energy to kill a porcupine because it will sustain them for weeks.
All right, I'm getting some cold toes. Why don't we head up the trail and see if we can get on a trail of a fisher?
I want to find a fisher.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Fun thing about following fisher tracks is they don't stalk their prey. They know their territory. They know their home ranges really well. And they basically are just moving through the woods sort of back and forth in sort of a non-random fashion, investigating places that they might flush prey out of, like places where there's dense brush.
So, you know, we're trying to hunt for these tracks. If people want to go out and hunt for the tracks themselves, is there a good habitat they want to go to?
They're an animal of forest habitats, and they need fairly large blocks of forest.
Well, what about when they sleep? What is it they're looking for?
Fisher have two different den areas. So one is their natal den. The females have a natal den that's almost always a hollow tree. And then they have rest dens, and these are hollow trees. They might be crevices and rocky areas. These are areas they'll come back to time and time again, and they have multiple of these rest areas throughout their home range. And in the summer, their rest area might just be an old squirrel nest or a big branch on a tree that they sleep on if it's a really warm day. And they're primarily nocturnal, so they're mostly moving around at night, especially when it first gets dark, late afternoon, or the early part of the morning is their most active periods. Dawn and dusk.
Dawn and dusk.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how many kits the females have and what that whole process of mating and reproduction.
So fishers mate in the spring. The surprising thing about it is they mate like 7 to 10 days after the female gives birth. And then they have this process called delayed implantation, where the fertilized egg goes through a couple of divisions and then just is in suspended animation before it actually implants in the uterine wall. It just stops development for another 10 or 11 months. They usually give birth to somewhere between 3 and 6 young. So the delayed implantation, it actually doesn't implant in the uterine wall until a month before they give birth.
So you're telling me that this poor female fisher spends a year pregnant? A full year?
A full year.
But exactly. Suspended, though.
And it's suspended.
Okay.
In the first,
it's kind of dormant.
So there's weeks of pregnancy kind of stays that way, right?
Nobody really knows why delayed implantation happens. It's evolved independently like 7 or 8 different times in different mammals. Almost all bats have it, bears, most of the weasels. And if we think about fishers being these solitary, wide-ranging mammals, maybe it's just easiest for the males to locate the females when they're sort of tied down to their natal dens with young. Look at this beech tree. That would be a nice fisher rest site. When it finds itself in this neck of the woods, it might be, you know, using a cavity like that in the winter for resting. That wouldn't be a natal den. Natal dens are almost always small, just big enough for the female to get in.
Wait, so that is high up in a tree where there aren't many branches. Fishers can climb, right?
Yeah, they're excellent climbers. And they have that really cool ability to rotate their ankles on their hind legs 180 degrees so they can go down a tree head first and still, you know, hang on with their feet.
Wow, this is really cool. Kind of the ultimate predator. Cool. You can see why there are so many myths about this.
Fishers are pretty quiet.
Whoa. Okay, we got to stop you here.
There's another myth buster happening.
Here it comes, and this is my favorite one. The screams of the fisher cat.
I've never heard him scream, no. Yeah, I don't know anyone who has confirmed that fishers scream. You know, probably most of the time it's barred owls which scream. But it also could be prey that is being killed.
You seem pretty ferocious.
All right, let's find some trash. Come on. Here, have you?
Yeah, I saw some.
Oh, I don't know. More open. Stopping a second and looking at this trail we're covering right now, which I know you're not saying it's Fisher yet, but looking at it.
This is him right here. Jumped right over there. It looks like there's a little bit of a tail drag right there. I mean, look at the way it goes down this hill. That's not how a fox would go down a hill.
So when we had almost lost all hope, Steve, on the trail up there, now you're feeling pretty good,
right? Pretty confident now, yeah. I think we might have had tracks from different animals up there. I think there was a domestic dog in there. I think there was a fox track, and there was the fisher track, and the quality of the snow is not as good, and so it wasn't clear. But then when it started coming downhill and across that log...
That was cool.
And we're looking at some beautiful fisher tracks.
There's a little tail drag mark on the top of the log. And then the track pattern going downhill is not the way a fox would go downhill, right? A fox would be very, its track wouldn't change much. It would continue to keep that direct register and very tight. The width of the track would be very narrow. The tracks got really wide and kind of splayed out as it was going downhill.
It looked like Fisher to me right there. I mean, I could picture
I think it was
him.
Probably sliding a little bit on this crust underneath because it's not obviously not breaking through the crust, kind of skirting off into this little seepy wetland, I think.
Well, I think at the end of this long trek, we finally found what we were looking for.
The Holy Grail.
Real fisher tracks. Yeah. Steve, thank you so much for taking us out.
It was my pleasure. This was a lot of fun. Great way to be out of the office.
Yeah, let's see if we can find the fisher at the end of the tracks.
I'm Kent McFarland.
And I'm Sarah Zahendra. Thanks for listening to Outdoor Radio.
You guys want to spend a little bit more time and head out on these tracks?
Yeah, let's go.
Outdoor Radio is produced in collaboration with the Vermont Center for Eco Studies. You can find photos and links to more information about fishers at vpr.net.